I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour, Linda Wertheimer, is the author of Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance. The reason for the book, well, there are several reasons for it, but she starts the book with a very troubling incident at a school in Bedford, Massachusetts. Actually, several schools. An elementary school where a swastika and the words "Jews kill them all" were etched on a playground slide. Swastikas painted on the boys' bathroom at the high school, and a pair of first grade boys were playing a game they called Jail the Jews. The author says the incident stirred painful memories of growing up in a rural Ohio town where she and her brothers were the only Jewish children in their school. Religion became a dividing line for some children in Bedford, and she says it happens in schools all over the country. So she went all over the country to hear stories of many young Muslim students who were the victims of remarks that weren't very nice, or worse than that, atheists who had been attacked, Sikhs who had their turbans ripped off as they waited to board a school bus. And she also was looking for schools where religion, many religions, were taught in hopes that it would soften some of the prejudice, that there would be greater understanding. And she spends quite a bit of time talking about schools in ninth grade students in Modesto, California. So it's a fascinating book, and we're delighted to have Linda Wertheimer with us this hour of the show. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Linda. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
These incidents that where you start the book in Bedford, Massachusetts, I read them and I thought, oh my gosh, this happens, and it was in your neighboring community, and these were young, young children.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty upsetting. I have a young child of my own, and all I could think of is, well, what if it happened here? And I spent a lot of, I ended up following up on that much later, and the cool thing is the town eventually came together over this, and they really look deeply at themselves and why is this happening? How can we prevent it from happening again?
And it's sort of, well, there were other incidents that in your life that made this an interesting topic, but you set off on a really cross-country journey looking at how religion was being taught and the response to religion being taught at all in schools. How much prejudice do you think is there in this country against minority religions?
Sadly, I think there is a lot, and I got this everywhere I went. I spoke to children who were Jewish, who were Sikh, who were Muslim, who were Hindu, Jehovah's Witness. It happens to Christians too. So it like say you're a really religious kid and you're in an area where most people are secular, it can happen that way. But it was definitely the worst for people who were in what is considered a minority religion in this country. Some of the stories just really chilled me to the bone. Like this one Sikh kid from Mexico, from Modesto. He was 24 when I talked to him, and he could still remember the first week of kindergarten. And he came in, and he didn't speak English that well at the time. He had been learning Punjabi at home.
Mm-hmm.
And he wore his patka, the little turban, and he talked about how kids were making fun of him and trying to yank it off. So he refused to wear it. And that still sticks with him to this day.
Mm-hmm. And in your case, you write when you go back to meet this church lady who was teaching you in your fourth grade, you say the day Jesus Christ entered your fourth grade classroom, your childhood changed forever.
Yes, it did. I had had what I would consider almost a blissful childhood before that. We lived in Horsheads, New York, in Western New York, and there were at least a couple of Jewish temples there. So people knew what Jews were. We weren't strange beings, and I think people were fairly respectful, and we were kind of part of a small Jewish community. Then we moved to Findlay, Ohio. In Findlay, there were perhaps three or four Jewish families at the time. We went to a small school district in Van Buren, and there were none. And my very first week in school, the church lady, as I like to call her, she came into the classroom, puts up this flannel graph with figures of Jesus, has this thing, Jesus loves me, and also started telling stories about Jesus. And I just wanted to sink into that chair. I was so uncomfortable, and then it got worse. My parents got me excused from the class, and then each week she'd come in, and I'd leave, and I would feel the eyes of my
teacher
following me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would ask questions, well, why don't you go? And I'd say, well, I'm Jewish. And they were sort of like, well, what's that? Do you believe in Jesus? And I would say, no. And they say, well, you're going to hell.
Mm.
And that continued. And various things happened throughout the years after that.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that a good portion of this prejudice now is directed toward those of the Muslim faith?
Without a doubt. I don't think there's any question. You know, particularly in the aftermath of 9/11, and now with, you know, the news about ISIS or ISIL,
yes,
it continues. And the Muslims I interviewed said, you know, any time there's something huge in the news involving Muslims, some people may get, you know, some kid may get teased, or a woman wearing a hijab may get it. And it didn't matter where I was. I heard the same kind of stories, whether I was in Wellesley, Massachusetts, which is a liberal enclave, or a small town in Texas, or Wichita, Kansas, Tampa, Florida. There was a lot of vile comments that people were making to the Muslim living next door to them.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Lumberton, Texas, where you have a very interesting early chapter of the teacher who had people in the class, the young women in the class, put on burqas. And oh my goodness, did she face a backlash?
Oh yes. The teachers at the school dubbed it Burqagate. And the interesting thing here is this teacher had been doing this kind of dress-up exercise for 15 years.
Oh.
So, it predated 9/11, and she simply saw it as trying on clothes from different countries. She did teach about Islam as part of world geography, and she would teach, like, here's what some of the basics are. And then she brought in clothes from different countries, from Afghanistan, or from Iran, from Saudi Arabia. She actually was a former home ec teacher, so she made some of the clothes herself. And nothing, there were never any complaints. The kids would take pictures of themselves. But there wasn't Facebook when she started doing this.
Right.
And in 2013, when she did it, somebody took a picture of five of the kids trying on the clothes. It was one girl in the blue burqa from Afghanistan, and then four kids in other things. Went on Facebook. Parents saw it. Went viral. The next thing you know, the school is under attack from people all around the country saying, how dare you do this? You know, you're glorifying the oppression of women. You're glorifying Islam. There were a few parents within the school that complained, but overall, the complaints really came more from the outside than from within the school.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the incident in Wellesley, Massachusetts. This regarded going to a mosque, didn't it?
Yes. And, you know, my personal story and the Wellesley field trip were really the two main catalysts for the book, because I heard about Wellesley first. And what happened in 2010, Wellesley took its sixth graders to tour the mosque in Roxbury. And they had been doing tours of mosques previously, but not this particular mosque. And this mosque had been in the news in the past, and there was a group in Boston that felt it had connections to terrorists, or had been funded by terrorists. None of this has ever been proven, by the way. They sent in a parent. There was a parent chaperone who belonged to that group, apparently, or had a connection. She goes in with a video camera. This now sounds a bit like a soap opera.
Yes.
So she goes in with a video camera, and she starts videoing the whole field trip, and something does go wrong. A male worshiper invites five boys to come up and join the line of worshipers, and the boys mimic what they see. And so they're caught on video, essentially mimicking Muslim prayer. I don't believe any of these particular boys were Muslim. And that happened in the spring of 2010. In September 2010, I think it was September 12th, 2010, right after the 9/11 anniversary, this group put out a video that said, Wellesley students learn to pray to Allah.
Oh, my goodness.
And as you can imagine, controversy just roared at that point. And the school district was under attack, just like these other school districts, but this was very different. I think there may have been only one parent at the school that I know of that actually opposed what even happened on the field trip. And most parents goodbye that school. They had been teaching sixth graders about the world's religions in a fairly deep fashion for more than a decade. And parents liked the fact that what they did was open the kids' eyes up to the rest of the world. They felt it was important education.
And when you find a school and you write extensively about what's going on in Modesto, California, which is a really interesting curriculum, it does make sense. We'll talk about Modesto in detail in a moment.
Yeah.
But for your classmates in fourth grade, even though it was some years ago, to not know what somebody from the Jewish faith was, for people to not know what Islam is all about, or evangelical Christianity for that matter, you have said that school children must learn about diversity of religion in the world. All of us should, because education can make us better equipped to discuss crises when religion is in the mix. And how often does that happen? A lot. Education can also dispel stereotypes.
Yes. I could not agree more.
You said that.
I said that.
Yeah,
I know I wrote that like a couple of days ago.
I know you did.
Yes. I mean, I'm like, those are great words. And I remember writing them. No, yeah, I believe that, because when all those things happened to us in Ohio, for the most part, I'm really now looking back, I think it was, you know, I always said, well, was this anti-Semitism or was this ignorance? And for the most part, I really think it was ignorance. There were some anti-Semitic things that happened. Our house did get swastika at one point. And I mean, you know, like putting on our windows and the car windows. And that is clearly anti-Semitic.
Yes.
But the kids asking me, what's a Jew? You know, do you believe in Jesus? And that kind of stuff. That's more ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really think they just didn't know. They didn't understand that, well, we do believe Jesus existed, but in our religion, he's not the son of God. He was just a person. And, so I think education can go to great lengths to dispel stereotypes, to create understanding. Do I think it's a panacea for the bigotry and intolerance we see out there? No. But I think the younger we start, the better off we'll be. I don't think kids that come out of the womb being bigoted.
So let's go to Modesto, California, and as you start the chapter there with Alyssa Davis, who is from an apostolic Pentecostal Christian faith, she walks into this classroom where there's a cross, a menorah, a miniature Buddha, a 6-inch tall Buddha. She is terrified because she feels that she will burn in hell if she stays in the classroom. What is that classroom all about? And guide us through what happened to her as she took this course in religion.
Sure. And interestingly, when I visited that same classroom, the same objects are still on the shelf. You walk in, and it's actually, I think it's something beautiful to see. So Modesto, they require all high school freshmen to take a world religions course. And they teach about at least 6 religions over the course of around 9 weeks. And they give each religion kind of the same sort of treatment, like the same amount of pages in the textbook, the same number of days. They talk about Sikhism. They talk about Judaism, Christianity, Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism. They also talk about the First Amendment as part of this course. So the kids learn why you can even learn about religion in the public school, which is something many Americans don't know. They also learn about religious freedom and what that means. I'll bring this up because I always get asked this question. They do talk about people who don't believe in any religion. And the way Modesto teaches, they do it through PowerPoints, through lectures. They do not do a lot of heavy discussion. There's no field trips allowed, no guest speakers. They're very, very careful. They don't want any controversy. So Alyssa, she saw those idols, as you said, and she was terrified. She went home. She talked to her mom about it. She cried. She was a kid who wanted all A's, and this was required course. Her mom said, oh, you know, take the course, you'll be okay. So she went back, and the more she went back, the more she liked it. And by the end of the course, she was certainly no longer afraid. She stayed in the course, and she said that she then began to think that there were some aspects of her religion that were leading her a bit astray, because she said she was being taught through this very, very conservative Christian viewpoint. I think it was a particular, I want to be careful on how I phrase that, because she said it was a particular church that she went to,
mm-hmm.
was saying you need to mistrust other religions and they're all worshiping idols and the devil and all that. So she began to wonder if that was right. And today she's still Christian, just not that particular church or that particular sect of it. And she said that the course really ended up, you know, like the church lady changed my life.
Right.
This course changed her life, but for the better, she felt. You know, she felt she came away a more well-rounded person. And she even talked about it, that when she sees a Muslim woman wearing a hijab, she smiles at her because she wants her to know, I'm not afraid of you.
Hmm.
So the course really had a huge effect on her.
Mm-hmm.
And it taught her, one of the things I would add is it taught her how to stand up for the smallest minorities, which is a big focus of that course. How do you stand up for those who often don't have a voice?
And we have many people who want to speak to this issue, Linda, so we will get to phone calls momentarily. Linda Wertheimer is our guest. Her book is Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance. She's an award-winning education writer and essayist, was the education editor of the Boston Globe, a reporter at the Dallas Morning News and Orlando Sentinel, and she's written for many publications. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Linda and Jackie in Arena is our first caller for you. Hi, Jackie.
Hello, Kathleen. Hello, Linda. Great show. Very important topic. So I was born in the United Kingdom. I'm proud I've been an American for 10 years now. But in the UK, the children receive one lesson. It's about a 45-minute lesson per week of religious instruction from when they start school at age 5 until they graduate high school at 16.
Huh.
Or they stay on longer if they're going to go to college, but they graduate at 16. And it's not about being Christians. This is an officially Christian country. Who teaches about the world's religions. And he actually breaks it into faith and then talks about the major denominations within those faiths. So you learn about Christianity and you learn about Catholicism and Lutheranism and I'm a Baptist and Methodist and all of that. You learn about Jehovah's Witnesses and Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists and all the great faiths. And what it teaches the British population is not to be afraid of people who don't think and believe in what you think and believe. And now, as a woman in my 50s, living in Wisconsin, with so much upheaval in the world that's using religion as a tailcoat on which to hang its message, to be able to say to people, you know, I don't claim to be an expert in the world's religion, but to be able to say, you know, we studied the Quran in high school, and that's not from the Quran. I swear to God, that's not from the Quran. I would know that Allah is God, and if we're teaching children from Wellesley to pray to Allah, we'd teach them to pray to God anyway. It's the same thing. Why do their parents not know this? So, you know, I think it's truly valuable when we can grow up with less fear because we have more understanding based on an informed population. Maybe we will stop and ask some questions before we start beating the you-know-what out of each other.
Yeah. And, Jackie, how long has that been taught in England?
It's the whole of the United Kingdom. You know I make that distinction.
I'm sorry. Right.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know how long, but it was taught when I was there, and I'm 56, and I wasn't the first in my family to have this. So I think, for many, many years, for more than half a century.
Oh, that's quite a tradition. Linda.
Yes, that puts us way behind the times, as you have noticed. I think part of the reason we're seeing so much controversy in the U.S. is partly because so many people don't even know that legally teachers can offer a comparative religion course. There was a study by Pew that said only 36% of those surveyed knew that public school teachers could offer a course like this.
Hmm.
So, you know, not only are we sort of ignorant about other religions, we don't even know that it's okay to teach about them, and it's always been okay to teach about them. It's like teach versus preach.
Mm-hmm.
So I have heard from a number of people that overseas they're a little more progressive than we are on this. I mean, Tony Blair has created this face-to-face foundation that you may or may not have heard of, and a lot of U.S. schools have been using it to just try and even connect high school classes to high school classes around the world of different faiths. So, yeah, we have a lot to learn from others.
Thank you very much, Jackie, for your call. Most informative. And Jim is next in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Kathy, I just want to share with you guys, I mean, not only do we have intolerance in religion in this country, we also have it in political beliefs. I have some daughters who attended a traditional Catholic grammar school, and one of my daughters did not like to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And a classmate of hers was fundamentalist Christian going to the Catholic school. The two of them wouldn't say the pledge, and the teachers and the nuns at the school went to great lengths to explain to the children the importance of tolerance and to different points of view. They emphasized at one time Catholicism was a discriminated religion in this country, and it was a teachable moment for all of the children. When they both graduated and went to the public high school, they were politically harassed by these right-wing political patriots, and I literally had to threaten litigation to get them, not just the students, but the teachers, to knock off that harassment. And that's a contrast between public and private institutions. I'd just like to hear your guest's response. I'll take my answer up
wait,
here.
Before you go, Jim, to be clear, they were harassed for not saying the pledge in high school? Oh, Jim, you left so early. I assume that's what he was saying, Linda. Is that your assumption?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say that I've run into that exact situation in my reporting. I mean, you do hear in some areas in the Bible Belt where more liberal kids may get picked on by kids from more conservative families. You will hear situations of some teachers doing things that are wrong, but I've also seen a lot of teachers who are doing things that are right, so it's really hard to make generalizations about some of the things he's talking about.
Let's talk a bit about how courses were set up in Modesto, because if there is this much concern about whether or not you're pushing one religion over another, it's my understanding from reading what you wrote about this that the teachers have been influenced by advice from the First Amendment Center, and to make sure that schools would avoid fights with the community over the courses, they were very meticulous about how they were arranged.
Yes. I think someone asked me the other day, you know, what district is setting the gold standard, and I said, in a way, Modesto is setting the gold standard for how you create a course like this to avoid controversy. And they, if I could backpedal a second, they actually, before they even created the course, they had gotten together with the community and had sort of this partnership with the community over a number of things, including can we have training about gay rights in Modesto?
Mm-hmm.
A very conservative community. So this course followed huge controversy on a different topic. In the training, what they wanted the teachers to get know is here's the line separating church and state. When you're in the classroom, here's how you need to be careful. You can never promote one religion over the other. They advised teachers to be very careful about how they talked about their own religion so they weren't showing favoritism. So you'd find a teacher who never told the kids his religion until the very end of the semester, and then he was very, very proud that they guessed he was a Buddhist when he was actually an evangelical Christian. So he felt that shows how unbiased I am. I think I mentioned earlier that they have a lot of rules, you know, no guest speakers, no field trips. They're just extremely careful in every way they do it. And when I say First Amendment Center training, they also train some of the administrators there, too, because if we're teaching kids to respect all religions, then within our school we also need to be careful that we're not promoting one religion over the other, that we're not putting there's an anecdote in there about putting Merry Christmas on the marquee at a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And these First Amendment-trained teachers went up to the administrators and said, you know, we can't do that unless we're going to recognize every holiday. And so then the next response was to put a little Happy Hanukkah sign in the office. And the teacher said, no, we really just shouldn't do any of that. You know, let's teach about it. Let's educate, not celebrate. And that's also one of the big things they learned there.
And it started, didn't it, from a student who was being harassed, really badly harassed, a gay student in a Modesto high school. And the superintendent was appalled by this, and so they had to figure out what to do in the community about this.
Yes, there was a student in one of the high schools, and he had been beaten up badly in the bathroom over being gay. And the superintendent, he had met with a family. It turned out the superintendent actually had taught the father, I believe, of this kid, so he knew the family very well. And he was appalled, he was embarrassed that this could happen in one of our schools, he said. So what he did was, his first reaction was, well, let's send the teachers to gay sensitivity training by a gay rights group. And then this one particular evangelical Christian church came down on the district really, really hard, and they said, you can't do that. That's promoting values we don't believe in. And so there was a real big mess for quite a while. They brought in Charles Haynes, a senior scholar of the First Amendment Center, and he became like the mediator in all of this and got everyone together and tried to get them to come to some sort of compromise. And out of that, I think they came up with a number of character traits that they would hang on the walls in the school district, and then the course leader sprung out of that. I mean, there was a lot of things happening at the same time, so it's not a real neat little package. This happened, then that happened.
Yes.
But they're all interconnected. And I think if there's a message about Modesto, it's that they didn't try to be coy about creating this course in the world of religions. They tried to involve their community. The teachers developed the curriculum. The educators did. But they weren't shy. They showed it to leaders from the faith communities, and they let them weigh in. The educators still had the final call, but they didn't keep any of it a secret. They were very public about it.
Let's go next to Steve in Lake Haley. Thanks for waiting, Steve. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you? Afternoon.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, one thing that I can see that studies have said is that people distrust both atheists and union bosses. And unfortunately, I fit in both categories. I think that the option that is devoted 5 seconds to atheism needs to be taught alongside the world of religions and what it means to be an atheist and what it means not to believe in God, and offer that as an option. Unfortunately, my child, who came to this conclusion on his own, has said that, and I know that he was kicked out of Boy Scouts because he expressed his beliefs that there is no God. And you talk about ostracism. You know, I think that atheists are probably some of the most ostracized people on the face of the earth. And so I'm just saying that if you do talk about religions, you have to talk about the lack of being religious and the lack of believing in God, because that's also in the Constitution.
That's taught, isn't it, as part of the curriculum?
Yeah, if I could jump in there, and thank you for your question. So in almost every course, it is taught to some extent. In Modesto, she spent a bit of time talking about what is atheism, what is agnosticism, what is secular humanism, and also when talking about religious freedom, she actually showed a news clip about Jessica Ahlquist, who had protested a prayer banner hung up in her high school in Rhode Island. And this teenager had stood up to this display of religion in the school that was obviously a violation of separation of church and state. And that was talked about in the Modesto class. In other courses that I saw, they at least mention it. I do think so there's sort of a couple things going on here. Modesto teaches kind of like a comparative religions course where they're specifically teaching about religion as a subject. A lot of other places teach about religion where it fits into world history or social studies or geography.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it depends on what the course is, whether they'll talk about it or not. I don't see teachers avoiding talking about it. A lot of these teachers may be atheists themselves. In terms of the experiences of kids who are atheists, I've certainly heard that as well. I mean, some of the famous Supreme Court cases that came out, I think back in the 40s, were complaints filed by atheist families. So I'm well aware that, yes, they've faced their lot as well.
Thanks, Steve, for the call. This hour, we're speaking with Linda Wertheimer. Her book is Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance. And we're asking the question, really, does it make sense in order to lessen discrimination, mostly against minority religions in this country, and just so people will have familiarity with a big part of people's lives, religion or being an agnostic or an atheist, that we should teach religion in schools. And we should start, should we have a model as the UK does, that you start in when people are very young and then just keep continuing? Or is there a good year, be it middle school, be it high school, to do this? What do you think? Our number is 800-486-8655. Laura in Milwaukee, hi.
Yeah, my phone's running out, so I'll talk real fast. MPS used to teach ethnic literature in schools. We went over world religions, and that was in the mid-70s. And they dropped those courses.
Why?
I have no idea. I guess parents were upset about it.
That actually sort of tracks some of the history on this topic, but go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you.
No, I think she's finished.
Oh, she's done. Okay, so I looked at the history of what has happened with teaching about religion in this country, because there were early movements in the 50s to try and do more of this, and there were, like, assorted courses that happened for a while, and then in 1963, when there was a famous court ruling, Abington versus Shem, and that kicked, you could no longer have teacher-led prayer or Bible verses. In the same opinion, the Supreme Court Justice said, you know, it might as well be an imperative that we teach about religion in the public schools. We should learn about comparative religions. It's part about being, you know, we should learn about what it takes to be part of a global society. And he mentioned that, and a lot of education schools and religion scholars took that as sort of their rallying cry, and they developed courses. And for a while, there was a movement in the 60s and 70s to have a lot of courses, Bible courses as literature, Bible courses as history, how can we do it? And there was training around that. And then there was the culture wars, where let's get God back in the schools. You know, like in the 80s, things started to go the other direction. And people talked about, you know, the religious right building.
Mm-hmm.
And schools started to back away from some of that stuff, and it disappeared for a while. And then in the 90s, late 90s, states started setting standards that we really need to be teaching about the world's religion. As part of history, as part of geography. And so things started coming back in the late 90s, early 2000s, though some world history teachers have always taught about it because they know you have to. It doesn't make sense not to talk about religion when you're teaching about the Middle East or another country.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Like this cycle.
Rich in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Kathleen and guest. I'm in serious need of advice. I was raised in a religious home that considered itself the very best and all other religions to be wanting in varying degrees from it. And as an adult, I've lived a completely secular life, arguing for secularism. And as I explained to the person who took my call, the advice I need is, to me, religion again and again, and we even see it in this current presidential campaign, is a source of contention and division. And I have sort of made peace with my past and my future on the basis of basically saying, I accept all religions, and I don't think any child in particular should be maligned for holding to a faith, but I'm not quite sure how one gets around the idea of people really believing that their religion is the best, that is, religion is divisive, and that I'm somehow going to teach about or learn about how to tolerate divisiveness.
Hmm.
And I guess I need your guest comment mm-hmm. on that.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you very much for that wonderful question. And that comes up a lot. You know, how can you teach about it if you're, if you're a devout Christian who believes this is the only way? So how can I teach about Islam or Judaism or Hinduism when I believe this and this only? In Modesto, some teachers opted out of teaching the course because they felt they couldn't separate their beliefs from what they're supposed to teach. I wrote a chapter called How Young is Too Young and looked at teachers who were teaching about the world's religions beginning in first grade. So middle school teachers and high school teachers in general, if they teach world history, have sort of gotten some courses where they learn about the different religions, at least in world history in college. Elementary teachers, you're asking them to teach about religion, they may or may not have had any instruction in any religion, unless except their own if they adhere to a particular religion. And I did run into a couple of teachers who were having that inner struggle that he's describing. And they were, like one of the teachers said, you know, she was still really upset. She still really felt like there was this war on Christmas, and she was really upset that she couldn't hang up Christmas decorations in her classroom anymore, and that they don't do, you know, Santa doesn't run to the school anymore. I mean, it's an exact anecdote. But and she was being asked to teach about all these other different religions in school, and she was struggling with it. So I said, well, how do you separate it? She says, well, I don't tell the kids what I think. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. But there's still struggle. You know, there's still... It is tough for some teachers, and I think, how do you deal with it? I think the answer is you provide training for the teachers so they know where the lines are. Everybody comes into their profession with their own beliefs.
Well, when we started the hour talking about these incidents in the neighborhood that was right next to your community and all of these really anti-Semitic activities going on, some of them coming from six-year-olds, for heaven's sake, I'm wondering if the school has a responsibility to change that atmosphere, or parents need to be discussed. What needs to happen to stop that?
I think it's a dual responsibility, and I think the school, that's exactly what the school district and community felt. I still remember this one pastor who I talked to, and this was for a later article I did on this topic. He said that if anything, it's we are responsible as Christians to respond to this, because it's our children who are saying these things. You know, it shouldn't be the responsibility of the Jews to deal with this. It's ours. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jews are like, well, we need to help educate. And what happened in Bedford is actually a good example. They looked at their curriculum from K-12 to look at, well, what could we do? Because obviously we have some kids coming through who are saying things who are totally inappropriate, and they need to learn how to respect differences. So they looked at, like, teaching tolerance and what they offer. There's some, if you go to teachingtolerance.org, they through the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they looked at the curriculum, but then the community also came together. Churches and temples and the different religious groups came together, and they've done things in the community to educate the parents, too. So they don't look at it as it only falls on the school. It's the schools, it's the community, it's the faith community,
right,
too.
Rich, thanks for your highly interesting question. Margie in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi. I guess my comments piggyback on what he was just saying. I think this is, like, long overdue, just to respect each other's cultural and religious differences. That's the only way we're going to get along in this world. And my question is, or my concern is, that the radical right wing that doesn't think anything is correct except their version of Christianity, you know, they'll be up in arms about it, and that how can you teach this because it's, you know, that's not true. And especially when these people they even discourage teaching contraceptives, which is common sense health issues. And then the question goes back, okay, then who's going to write the curriculum? And are certain people going to, you know, like the textbooks that just came out that talked about the slaves coming over as workers, mm-hmm, as opposed to slaves. There's a slant in everybody's kind of writing. And I think this would be a monumental project, but well worth going for.
I love your comment here. There's a lot of questions thrown in there. I mean, one is, I would say, look to Modesto as a model on how you involve everyone in the community, including who you're calling, like, the far right or, you know, the very evangelical Christian community, because it can be done if you include them in the conversation. So that's one thing I would say. How do you deal with a curriculum issue? Obviously, what I've said depends on where it is. You know, Modesto essentially developed their own curriculum from a whole bunch of different sources. They don't really have what I call a textbook. They have a binder with things they've collected that they feel are fair and unbiased. They do use Usborne's World Encyclopedia of Religions, which is a fairly basic book on religions aimed at kids. Wellesley Middle School also doesn't really use a textbook per se. They look at things that, you know, they feel are unbiased. I'm well aware that there's been textbook disputes in Texas and other places in this country over, well, how much do we say about Christianity versus Islam and right. da-da-da-da. You know, most of the places I'm looking at where they're teaching about it, they're looking at those textbooks and they're saying, well, they're not that great. Let's find our own resources. You know, even I went back to Ohio where I grew up, and the teachers there, they had a textbook, but they were also supplementing it. So they... Part of it is we have to train our teachers, and you have to have a good education force in there. Good teachers will not just use a textbook. I know we can't rely on that. I mean, I think teachers are generally, a lot of teachers I've met are pretty fed up with a number of textbooks because of what's going on out there.
Are school districts, Linda, more open to this when they have more diverse or at least significant numbers of minority populations? I know in Modesto there was a significant Sikh community.
So, I'm not so sure because, well, so Modesto has a fairly diverse community, but Wellesley's not that diverse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Wellesley, what you could say is a fairly liberal community. You know, it's a liberal, progressive community, home of Wellesley College, and they're not afraid to push the envelope in education there, including about religion. And they don't have, I mean, they have maybe, I think there was one or two Muslim kids in the entire sixth grade and some Hindu kids, but it wasn't as diverse as Modesto. And going back to Ohio, there's no diversity really in my alma mater, and they're teaching about the world's religions now. So, and the teachers seem very jazzed about it.
Hmm.
So I'm not sure I could make that generalization based on what I saw. I mean, I think, mm-hmm. I think, maybe in terms of pushing the... Well, no, because Wellesley's pushing the envelope, and they're less diverse than Modesto. So I think it may have something to do with the region of the country.
I see.
In terms of how far they're willing to go.
Yeah. Well, we welcome our phone calls. Our guest is the author of Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance. Linda Wertheimer is our guest, and we have one line open. We've been... filled with many calls, interesting calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls, and it's Louise in Richland County. Hi, Louise.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm a retired teacher, and something that struck me in my last few years is that increasingly students... ignorance of religion, particularly Christianity, but other religions as well, had a real impact on all of the literature that we were studying in English class.
Oh, I imagine.
They didn't understand any of those references, you mm-hmm. know, and you're talking about Milton, and you're talking about, you know, the writers from Russia, and just that background knowledge to be able to fully appreciate all of this literature just was not there. I taught a mythology class for several years, and one of the things that came out was how many of these belief systems really were very similar in some of their basic patterns. But it was a battle to get students to recognize that because they just didn't have that basis.
Mm-hmm.
So from an academic standpoint, even, regardless of whatever you believe, just the fact that they were unequipped to fully appreciate some of the other subjects that we were studying.
We haven't talked about that, but how true that is, Linda.
Yes, yeah, and that comes up a lot. You know, Modesto teachers thought about that as well. They one of the reasons they liked the idea of separating religion out and trying to teach the kids about it, they felt it prepared them more for the world history course when they had religious references, but they also said, yes, it could prepare them better for literature as well. Now, she's also talking about biblical literacy, which other books have been written about, in every religion course that I've seen, sometimes they'll talk about things in the Bible, but sometimes they won't get to the nitty-gritty that would help them know where eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth came from. And that has, some scholars out there said, well, we should also have a required course on the Bible. And that's been a huge controversy because that has led to charges of proselytizing when the teachers have taught those courses. And it's a more slippery slope than teaching about the world's religions, if you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how do we improve biblical literacy? I mean, it's biblical literacy, and I just want people to know, too, like, you know, what's the difference between Judaism and Christianity? You know, what are the basic differences between some of the religions? There's a lot of issues with us.
Yeah, there are. Louise, thanks. Nate in La Crosse, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just wondering if kids are being discouraged from religion in general, if they're being taught fundamentals of some of these religions, like Christianity is, you know, they're for owning slaves and against homosexuality, and Islam, you know, they're against anyone who doesn't believe in what they believe in. They think they should be put to death. Wondering if that's discouraging some of these kids, or maybe they're not being taught, maybe they're just given a sugar-coated version of these religions.
Yeah, I think we need a deeper understanding of those religions. Linda.
Thank you for your question. I've heard that before. Are they sugarcoating the religions? And they are teaching them the basics. Like, they'll teach them, like, they try and almost do it, and this is the main figure in Islam. This is the main figure in Judaism and in Christianity. Here are the core practices of each religion. Here are the main holidays of each religion. Do they sugarcoat the good and the bad of each religion? I think there's a lot of disagreement over that. I mean, that's part of the reason we have all these controversies. Are they painting Islam to be a perfect religion and Christianity to be a bad religion? I don't believe either of those statements is true. I have heard teachers take the time to say, yes, you know, 9/11 happened, and yes, those terrorists were Muslim, but at the same time, you can't use that to say all Muslims are evil. But they do talk about some of these things with the students.
Well, there are so many offshoots of all of these religions, too. You could spend years and years. I mean, there might be a sect of Islam, a sect of Christianity that would espouse some things that we all find deplorable.
Exactly. Right. I mean, we're talking Modesto spends 9 weeks, about a week on each religion.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to get to it all.
No.
And it's just not going to happen, so they have to pick how they're going to do it, and what they're trying to do is achieve some basic religious literacy.
Thanks, Nate, for your call. Laura Menominee, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently had an experience. I became a big sister through the Big Brothers Big Sisters program,
mm-hmm.
and the first match I was supposed to have was a girl who came from a Hispanic family and whose father had recently converted their family to Islam, and we were going to go through with the match and everything, and then when the lady who was setting us up talked with them and let them know things about me, the father had refused to have me mentor his daughter because I was not Muslim also. So I'm just sort of curious your thoughts about the minority religions having the same intolerance as, you know, other Christianity and Catholicism things, and their intolerance towards the minority religion. Yeah.
I mean, I think you could go right back to what I just said a few moments ago. You just can't stereotype all people in one religion. You can't stereotype all Christians. There's so many different branches. You can't stereotype all Muslims. There are so many different branches of that. I belong to a book club that's called the Daughters of Abraham, and we happen to be Muslim, Jewish, and Christian women. And we meet once a month, and we read a different book about different religions. And we are learning. So I think we're going to learn the most by getting to know each other and not stereotyping.
I like the card that one of the evangelical pastors that you met carries, and you say this in your book, evangelical but not exclusive, biblical but not doctrinaire, traditional but not rigid.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. What an interesting conversation and book. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Linda Wertheimer. The book is Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance. Tomorrow, first hour, we're going to be looking at the Democratic debate. It's on, I believe it's 7:30 tonight, so all you political people watch, and we'll talk about the whole thing tomorrow, hour one of our show.